Crypto 101 fam, we're back again to talk about my favorite online shopping, and it is Quince. Lately, I've just been more intentional what I wear every day. I've talked about it before. The Florida heat, I got to be very intentional about my wardrobe, and I'm leaning into pieces that feel easy, comfortable, but still put together as the weather heats up in Florida. It just makes getting dressed simpler. Quince has my go-to. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are clean, and everything just works, and I'm so busy on the podcast, I just don't want to overthink it. Quince has all the wardrobe staples for spring. Think 100% European linen shorts and shirts from $34, lightweight, breathable, and comfortable, but still look put together and clean. 100% Pima cotton tees with a softness that has to be felt. Their pants also hit the same balanced, relaxed, and comfortable, but still polished enough to wear pretty much anywhere. Everything is priced 50 to 80% less because they cut out the middleman from your favorite brands, but don't sacrifice on the quality. Quince works directly with ethical factories to cut out the middleman. So you're getting premium materials without the markup. Guys, you heard me talk about Quince for a long time now, and it's because their clothes are awesome and the shopping experience is second to none. The online store is so fun. They have so many items and they've been a great sponsor to Crypto 101. So if you're thinking about getting some new clothes, go to quince.com. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/crypto101. When we started this podcast, it seemed like we had to figure it all out on our own. Scripts, setup, filming, schedules, logos. It was super overwhelming, and every day seemed to introduce a new decision that needed an answer. When you're starting off with something new, it seems like your to-do list keeps growing every day with new tasks, and that list can easily begin to overrun your life. Finding the right tools that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything can be a game changer. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the e-commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. From household names like us at Crypt Nation and the Crypto 101 podcast, where you can get our book and merch, to brands that are just getting started. Get started with your own design studio with hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand style. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. And best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. Go to shopify.com/crypto101. That's shopify.com/crypto101. We are live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a Friday special edition of The Rundown. Listen, there's a narrative right now that crypto is dead, but the data is telling a very different story. Since the war started, Bitcoin and Ethereum have been leading price performance along with the tech sector. And while retail interest in crypto is fading, the Wall Street firms are still hiring for crypto jobs and buying the dip. So the real question is crypto actually dead, or is this the next cycle being built while nobody's paying attention? Like I said, guys, this is a really special episode. As you can see, we have our fearless leader, Bryce Paul, here. Unbelievable to get him on a rundown on a Friday. And our newest team member, who some have seen in the chat last week. And if you're inside the community, you know him well by now. But a first ever rundown appearance for Hunter. Super glad you guys can make it. Hunter, I'm going to go to you first. Welcome to the rundown, my friend.
Thank you for that introduction. Wow. We're finally here. It's been 2 months and I'm out here in the front lines now with the team, with our fearless leader and our super producer. I'm excited to get into the topics today. Man, what a time to be alive. The market is moving and we are grooving.
And yeah. Bryce, some awesome podcasts. I feel like the Crypto 101 podcast gets the Builders in the Bear Market badge of honor because yes. We have been pumping out some awesome guests with you and Brendan, but excited to get your takes here on what's going on more in the news.
Absolutely. I think we've definitely earned our builders of the bear market badge of braggadociousness. No, we're able to say that we've gone through many bull and bear markets. You know, the podcast has been running since July of 2017. So we've been through the ups, we've been through the downs. And for anybody who says, you know, and you know, oh, we're not going to buy Bitcoin because Bitcoiners just got lucky, right? You know, they were just early. No, we were early. Maybe we were lucky, but we had a lot of gall. We had some cojones to hold through many different 80% drawdowns, or where we're at right now, 50% drawdowns. And we're either completely crazy or we're philosophically driven. And I think we're a little bit more philosophically driven than we are crazy, because we back it up with a lot of numbers and data. And so, you know, crypto is enduring another mini bear market, but this one is like, you know, there's so many institutions now in the market that they're not going to let this thing fall 80 or 90%. That was in the retail pre-ETF era. And now we get these more stock market-like drawdowns where they're more elongated by time, but the price is not as dramatic. So yeah, all that to say, we're clearly in a bounce right now off the lows of 60,000 where we were at. In, I guess that was February 6th when the whole market collapsed and a bunch of, you know, people went bankrupt. It was crazy. Now we're up at around $80,000. And so you've got a pretty good, you know, $20,000 bounce. But there's still a lot of technical resistance ahead. So I'm sure we'll talk about all that. But long story short, I think we're in sort of this long-term bottoming area, you know, between 60 and 80. Sure, we could still fluctuate around. But I think the case is really good for the rest of 2026. We've got a new Fed chair coming in who owns millions of dollars worth of crypto exposure across 30 different funds and projects and all that kind of stuff. You know, obviously wants rates to come down in due course. So we've got a couple things to look forward to there. We've got the Clarity Act. I don't want to spoil the whole show, but just to give people a little bit of a lay of the land, some things that we're looking at. I mean, by July 4th, the White House says they want to sign that landmark crypto regulation bill that will open the floodgates to trillions. So there's a lot to look forward to. When the prices are crashing, you got to take that long-term view. That's what we do. That's why we've been here since 2017. And we're going to keep staying optimistic. We're still going to keep, you know, researching, and we're going to keep hiring the best and brightest. So this whole show is going to be about Hunter, the best and brightest of the future. But that's my little 2 cents up top.
No, it's perfect. And for Hunter, there is a little at the end of the show. We're going to just dive in a little get to know Hunter segment at the end. But the markets are so hot that we just have to dive right into it. I see a couple people in the chat. Holy Whale's back. Brett's here. Brett from Oklahoma.
All right.
He's on a flight. He's watching. That's awesome.
Starlink. I bet he's on Starlink.
What anybody else there that's in the chat watching live, let us know where you're from. We love to check in to see where everybody's listening from. And CJ is on a flight, so he's in, you know, 20,000-30,000 feet. So that's how we're going to start it. Let's start wide here, gents, and then as Bryce said, the technicals, we're going to dive in and get down to the nitty-gritty and go over some absolute winners that Bryce and Hunter have called recently over the last couple weeks.
Heck
so
yeah.
Let's dive into this. It's the relative performance, something that we've been kind of tracking week to week on the show. Basically, since the this chart's from Fundstrat and Bloomberg, basically showing technology, Bitcoin, and Ethereum, your top three performers kind of at the end of February into March, kind of basically saying relative performance since the start of the Iran conflict. So obviously, we've seen the technology market, the AI trade going, but surprisingly, as this whole Bitcoin crypto is dead movement, there's your two relative outperformers, Bitcoin, Ethereum. So what does this show you, Bryce? Is this something in your mind that kind of goes back to that institutions are buying? Is this retail buying? How do you get this type of relative outperformance when it's an area of conflict and half the people say that Bitcoin's a store of value? I'm generalizing, but half the people say Bitcoin's a store of value. Half the people are saying it's a risk asset. We're going into war and Bitcoin's outperforming and Ethereum's outperforming a large part of the other rest of the markets.
Yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, you could have your view, but your view, if it's not doing what the market is telling you, then it's wrong, right? And so clearly, you have to look at the prices since the war began, and Bitcoin and Ethereum and all the things that have sold off, you know, in Q1 and Q4 of last year, like Technology Mag 7, you know, small caps and stuff. These are the things that rebounded the hardest since the war began. And so I think this just goes to show you, you know, sometimes people just try to find a narrative, but sometimes things are just technically driven. This could be just, you know, these coins found and these assets, you know, had been, you know, at great multiples and great valuations. And it just took, you know, sort of this geopolitical shock or this exogenous event to kick the markets into some kind of volatility. And these are where a lot of the supply had already been offered, right? A lot of the supply had already been sold throughout the past 6 months. That's why they were down the lowest. So they had the most amount of reprieve once people realized, okay, you know, this whole, you know, shock here with oil, this isn't going to be a forever thing. You know, things will probably shake out for the positive over the course of the next few months for the West and for these different kinds of companies. And plus, we're probably going to get rates lowered as, you know, things kind of progress. So that's one way that I look at it. But yeah, I think the question still surrounds Bitcoin around, like, is it, you know, is it a geopolitical risk-off asset? I think clearly no. In fact, right here, you can see it's still tightly correlated with technology. And, you know, you just think about the cohort of people who are holding Bitcoin are typically tech guys, you know, and so they're tech guys that see this, you know, they've got the libertarian, you know, philosophy and stuff, but the overlap of holders is tech and, you know, in Bitcoin more than it is, you know, Bitcoin and gold or Bitcoin and finance. Bitcoin is really born out of the tech movement. And so I think that's why you see those correlations go. And I do not think that this moment in time where Bitcoin is now the best performer in light of this geopolitical chaos, I do not think that validates it as like this digital gold now, and like gold is forever no longer going to be a part. Like gold's been around for 5,000 years. It's got a very specific, you know, use case and, you know, trust and goodwill that it's built up over 5,000 years or 6,000 years or whatever. Bitcoin's, you know, I think that was a catchy narrative in the early days, like it's digital gold, but it's proving to be, you know, more than that. And so I think that it's, you know, it's a technology play more, and, you know, of course, a savings play. But it just, you know, I don't think that this, you know, period of outperformance of gold during a geopolitical thing means now it's the new gold. I think it's got to work back up to that.
Yeah, Hunter, feel free to add in on this kind of short-term window of the relative performance.
Yeah, I mean, so technology is the most volatile sector out there. Over the last 10 years, last decade, you could just buy the triple Qs, the NASDAQ ETF, and you'd be up way more than you would have if you just bought the overall market or if you had a diversified portfolio with bonds. And I think a lot of people notice it now. You know, everyone just wants the quick winners, and whatever's most elastic when it falls down bounces back up the quickest. And we're seeing that. And also because the nature of the next decade is AI, tech. I mean, that's the future. Financials and utilities and consumer staples, I mean, that's boring. We're here for the tech. We're here for the fun. And, you know, Bitcoin itself, maybe not digital gold, but it's really a proof of concept of how the blockchain can work in our, you know, our future infrastructure. And so I just think, you know, no matter what, you're having, you know, a lot of earnings this week. You had AMD go up 20%. You know, stuff that's supplying chip manufacturers. This narrative isn't going anywhere because the future of our economy is going to, rest and reside on AI and technology.
That's a good point. There's that narrative coming back that I always see this on X, right? It's like, what currency is the AI going to choose? Is it going to be dollars? Is it going to be dollars on chain? Is it going to be Bitcoin? Is it going to be on Ethereum, Solana? I think that's a really interesting conversation where all this, you know, some of these AI companies and power and chips is going parabolic. And like, does it eventually circle back into that crypto conversation of settlement layer, which I think is like kind of exciting to think about. I don't necessarily have the crystal ball with the answer of what that is, but I really like the position of where, well, you know,
that's an interesting narrative, something I've been ruminating a lot upon. I don't know if it was an intended consequence of crypto, but there's this thought that the, you know, internet never had its native money. And you think of just throughout all of history, we've had a bartering mechanism, some sort of medium of exchange to confer value between two counterparties. And so now crypto is kind of the medium of exchange between AI and AI agents, these protocols that now do work behind the scenes. And so I don't know if that was an intended consequence, but there is a huge value proposition there.
Yeah. I just asked Claude what if it could only hold one currency forever, what would it be? And it said Bitcoin, and there's this long reasoning and so on and so forth. I'm curious if that's just because Claude knows I'm a crypto guy, or if he would actually give me that answer if I had never searched for anything crypto related before. But if the AIs want it, they're going to have it. I mean, this is definitely AI is not going anywhere. It's going to be, I think, the main reason for all the productivity gains and earnings growth that we're seeing. People are able to do, data analysis and MVP building, right? Minimum viable product building and testing and A/B testing. They're able to do so many more processes and operations on their organization, and they're able to, save a lot of time and save a lot of costs. What will start to rise in costs is not their express labor costs, but I think it's going to be the amount of money that they're spending on these frickin' tokens, not crypto tokens, but AI tokens. So they're going to have one software engineer who they're paying, $500,000 a year to. And that software engineer right now is using a subsidized version of Claude Code or Codex that has, a really, really, really high rate limit, a lot of tokens, all that kind of stuff. So maybe they're paying $100 a month for this. And they're like, wow, it's great. I'm getting all this amazing ability to use Claude Code and Codex. And I'm just so productive and doing it for really, really cheap. Okay. That's a state in the market right now. In the future, you're still going to pay that software engineer $500,000. But as OpenAI and Claude really need to monetize and raise revenue and basically make all this money, they're going to do it through the pricing power, right? You've got these engineers who've got all their systems set up. It's like the first hit is free, like the drug dealer sort of. The first hit's free. You come into our ecosystem. You input all your data. You're going to be doing it for cheap. In 2 years down the line, trust me, you're not going to be paying the same amount of money that you're paying right now for your ChatGPT subscription or your Claude subscription. Look at Netflix, right? They started at $4 or $5, and of course they added things over time, but now you can't get a Netflix subscription for under $20. And so it's like, I think that a lot of money is just going to be going to not people labor, but actually AI is going to be getting paid. And of course, they're going to be, these companies that are going to be getting paid for the AI. But I think that's a long-winded sort of way. But the composition of all this labor and productivity, it just is completely getting deconstructed. You don't really know what's what. So I think there's going to be a lot of volatility as this sort of switchover goes. I think it's going to be something that the Fed chairman is really going to need to focus on is how we parse this data, what kind of communications do we do? What's the right things to be tracking? AI is just going to be a huge, inflection point on all these businesses. And to put a point on that, you're already seeing companies like Coinbase just this past week lay off 14% of their company or 700 people, claiming essentially AI is now doing the job of all these engineers. We're able to have one engineer do the job of 10 engineers. And guess what? There's less people issues. There's less, a million things you could go down the reason. And so it's just interesting to see all of this play out. So anyhow.
This is what we do on the rundown. You never know where we're going to end up. Hot takes off the press right here, fellas. Coinbase fires, like Bryce just said, a large number of their staff. And then they have their earnings call. Brian Armstrong lays off how, AI is the future and Coinbase is an AI company and we're cutting costs with AI. And, the average human doesn't like to see large layoffs. And then you go down and you say, okay, well, what has Coinbase spent on their, spent in the last couple of years? I know they bought the podcast platform for, tens of millions of dollars, and they bought a bunch of different other companies for a couple billion, and it hasn't really leaked into any business growth for them. So people are like, what are you spending all your money on a podcast for and then firing your staff? And then I saw this they announced this on earnings that they bought some Bitcoin. So is this, they obviously hold way more cash on their balance sheet than Bitcoin. My question to you, let's start with Hunter. Is this a belief in Bitcoin buy for Coinbase, or is this a PR stunt?
By having more cash than Bitcoin on their balance sheet?
No, by buying Bitcoin this week. They bought, I think it was like $88 million worth of Bitcoin because they were getting trashed online, basically.
Right. Well, it kind of coincides with Saylor and him saying that, you know, we're just going to sell a little bit of Bitcoin to inoculate the market so that if we ever have to do it in the future, you know, everyone's going to be okay with it. It was just, you know, like, it's okay. It's just a little quick little vaccine virus, whatever. But no, Coinbase, I think, is here. They've proven that they want to be here for the long term. I mean, they wouldn't be building out, you know, a blockchain and, you know, Coinbase Ventures. And then they have X402 that's doing a bunch of AI agentic stuff. I could imagine, you know, during a time like this where the market's down a little bit, you want to help prop up the market because that'll help up your treasury, whatever, you know, the digital assets you have and your bank. So you might buy a little bit more. But other than that, I think they're pretty fair across the board with their and with their belief. I mean, they're one of the OGs in the game. I don't see really anything they do as something to just be naive to the market.
Yeah, I would say, like, going back to the early days of Coinbase, they used to just be like only Bitcoin. So a lot of the Bitcoiners liked them. And then they added Litecoin and Ethereum. I believe it was 2015, 2016, 2017. In those kind of years, they really started to go full bore on altcoins, and they started talking really positively about donating all of their, you know, to the Ethereum Foundation, because there was, you know, they didn't want to donate to Core. And then they notoriously supported kind of the Bitcoin Cash airdrop, which was really, really a crazy period in August of 2017, when Bitcoin had a contentious hard fork. And if you held one Bitcoin after the fork went through, you now held one BTC and then one BCH. And then the whole market was like, well, what's the real one? Now I have a copy of both, and it was mostly traded on Coinbase, right? And they supported this fork. And I remember there was periods when Bitcoin Cash was more valuable almost than Bitcoin Core. And there was so they got a lot of flack, a lot of hate for that. And they just, you know, really didn't invest much in the Bitcoin ecosystem, even though they got their whole start off of it. So they've gotten dragged publicly for all of that stuff over the years from crypto people who have been more philosophically driven as opposed to market driven. And, like, you got to realize this guy, Brian Armstrong, has got to run a company. He's got to make profit margins. He's got to skate to where the puck is going, not to what it used to be. And clearly the market demanded prediction markets and NFTs and altcoin trading and derivatives and, like, all these other things that they're doing and they're accelerating in, whereas, like, you know, the OG Bitcoiners who have a lot of clout, and so they're able to stir up all of these online, you know, debates and virality and stuff. I think this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, like, all right, guys, we're going to do a little something for you here, too.
I agree, because they were definitely getting dragged just in general, like, just not buying Bitcoin over the years. And then they had a tough week on X. I'm always perusing on X, tweeting, seeing what's going on. I saw it's a fair amount, like, going after kind of the operations and some decisions. And, you know, I think Brian Armstrong sold $500 million in stock, you know, over the last year.
Yeah, was that real? I want to double check that one, because I saw that circulating.
Claude.
I mean, well, he sold a lot of stock before.
Yeah. Well, you got to sell your stock. You can't. You got to make some money, I guess. But he's also been a leader in the Clarity Act, and we'll get to that later. So, you know, he's definitely in
a leader in and the, also a stickler on one stickler. Point that really benefits his business, that he's been saying we're not going to support it unless we get.
He was the first one to go against the Clarity Act, right? Yeah. And I think he got a couple phone calls. He got called. Sorry, go ahead.
No. You're right. I think he got a couple phone calls. I said, I think they're gonna work it out.
Well, let's move on. So I think we got to follow. Basically, we're saying in here is where's the money going, right? The belief is that the future is on chain. The future is in crypto. And so, yeah, there's obviously retail euphoria we've seen over many cycles, but what's happening right now? Who's buying right now? And if you've tuned into the show over the last couple months, we've been showing you the flows. The net inflows of the Bitcoin ETF has been great. And it's like, okay, well, who's buying that? Is it retail versus institutions? And then what is Wall Street doing? What are these institutions doing? And they're hiring guys. JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, Bank of America, Citigroup, Fidelity, and Jefferies. We all know those names. They've been around in finance and living on Wall Street forever. And they're all hiring digital asset positions, director of digital assets, senior lead software engineer, digital asset teams, equity research, crypto, and digital assets. Like, this is my point of when Morgan Stanley launched their Bitcoin ETF, and they don't have a ton of ETFs at Morgan Stanley, and the BlackRock one, and then hiring all these people. The point that I've kept hammering home to the listeners is that these firms don't invest time, people, capital, and products just to do this for 3, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and be like, ah, that didn't work, we're out. This is laying a foundation of work that isn't going anywhere. So I wanted to get your take, Bryce, on when you see these type of names start hiring, when you know, three, 4, 5 years ago, you can pull that clip of Larry Fink saying it's, you know, Bitcoin's for criminals and terrorists, and JP Morgan and Jamie Dimon, friend of the show, Jamie Dimon, saying, you know, it's a pet rock, like Bitcoin's a pet rock, and now he's hiring digital asset teams. So, you know, is this bullish to you? What do you take away from this?
Yeah, this is certainly bullish because it affects the psyche of the, let's call it, the older generations, the people who are now 40 years plus, or even my parents, which is the baby boomer generation. So they have all of their wealth with financial institutions like the ones you see on the screen, whether that's JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, Bank of America, Citigroup, Fidelity, Jefferies. What do they have with these guys? They've got the trust, okay? So my parents' generation doesn't inherently trust Bitcoin or Coinbase or any of these other things with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars the way they would an institution like this. So what we have here is a classic case of certainly the innovators who initiated this whole movement are not on this list because they've already, you know, been hiring these people, right? Now you have the incumbents that are saying, okay, innovators, you started this trend. You've proved it out. Now we're going to throw this thing into hyper growth mode. We're going to put our public, you know, balance sheets behind this. We're going to raise money. We're going to, you know, do all of these things. Oh, and by the way, we have the customers' trust who have all the money. Because our generation, I hate to admit it to everybody, doesn't have the money, okay? We don't have the juice. The boomers have the juice right now. And so there, I think I saw something like a $60 trillion wealth transfer over the course of the next 25 years from boomers to millennials as they inherit you know, all this estate and stuff. But right now, our generation, because again, the boomers have the really low mortgages, the really cheap houses, they've been the beneficiary of the stock market compounding over the past 30 or 40 years, they've got all the money. And so the fact that all of these institutions are now saying, okay, The new folks, the young guys, they proved out this new technology. It's really cool. We've now safety tested it. We've done QA. We've got the, you know, investment case. Now we're going to go full bore into it. That's good for everybody who's watching this show who owns cryptocurrencies, because there's a tidal wave of money out there that has never once accessed crypto before that is about to access crypto. They're going to be doing it through these names. They're going to be shaving off 1 percentage point or 2 percentage point of their $10 million estate or their $10 million brokerage account, 1%, 2% of that, and they're going to go market buy Bitcoin ETFs. They're going to go market buy, you know, Bitwise's, you know, indexes and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to drastically drive up the prices, I think. Not financial advice, but I think it's going to drastically drive up the prices of the top cryptos, and that's also going to then be the point in time when sharp hedge fund traders and sharp individuals or family offices will sell the strength, right? They'll sell, you know, as there's this great demand, they'll sell their Bitcoin or their Ethereum, their Solana, because people are paying the exorbitant prices. They'll book some profits. They'll rotate further out the risk curve, get some multiples on the small caps, the micro caps, the meme coins, the NFTs, and there's going to be that whole big new cycle again, except this is going to be the biggest cycle in terms of notional value. It might not be the biggest price move in price bubble that we're going to see in terms of percentage points, because it's a lot easier to move a $1 asset like Bitcoin to $100 than it is to move a $100,000 asset to $10 million. And so it's probably not going to be as high of a percentage move, but these guys are going to bring in the money, and it's going to be a more sustained run. So you can't really get more bullish than what we're looking at with them building out their entire suite of products and hiring all those people. It just, it screams that we just all need to be patient here. Let them build.
And then kind of what you said is a great point on Bitcoin. Like, hey, maybe that, when 10, 20, 30, 50, 100X is, especially the 100X isn't there anymore, but, you could still do a 10X to a million pretty quickly, or, especially with your scenario of that funneling down of assets and piling into Bitcoin at a 1 to 5% ratio, which a lot of these names are starting to recommend now that, of course, they have products and want to sell you those products. But there is still a lot of juice in the markets if you know where to look. And that's the cool thing about this podcast, right? Is we kind of do this. We want to give you the high level of what's going on. And people, we kind of bring on Brian and Momentum Moneymakers or Brendan and his calls. And we kind of go over some winners. And kind of introducing Hunter here, I thought it was a perfect time to bring him on because Hunter has a segment in our newsletter called Coin of the Week, where him and Bryce and the team kind of, get together and kind of look at some assets that might be moving sooner rather than later, where the quote unquote juice might be. And I wanted to bring on Hunter and Bryce to show you, people always ask, what's it like in the community? What's it like in the community to get the newsletters from Bryce, Rohit, Brendan, Hunter, the Momentum Moneymaker guys? So that the kind of this episode today for this segment is kind of give you a look into what that's like. And if you're interested and you like what you see and you want to get more involved, there is a link in the show notes to join VIP, and you get more of Bryce, VIP calls. You're going to get more of Hunter, more of Brendan, more of the entire team. You're going to get our newsletters and tons of awesome things to continue learning and growing on your crypto journey. So take a look at that. The VIP link is down there. And if that's not for you, we have the $1 trial. We also have the free book, which Hunter has on the back there. I like that little product placement there, Hunter. Free book in the link as well. And then one final ask before I hand it off to Hunter to open up the charts is we have over 100 people right now, which is awesome. Really appreciate everybody joining. Give us a like. It really helps me. You guys know how passionate I'm about our YouTube channel and podcast. Give us a like. And if you're new here, bottom right, you'll see our logo. Subscribe and join us for more because you're going to want it. Let's hand it off to Hunter. Hunter, you've had some absolute winners along with Bryce and the rest of the team for the coins of the week. And I know you wanted to share a couple of them and pull up the charts.
Certainly. Let's do some wonderful TA here because it is a perfect day to do that.
You already got the charts. I just wanted to make one note on the Brian Armstrong Coinbase shares. That had been a sale because I was looking into that a little bit more. He had sold those $500 million worth of shares since April 2025 through January 2026, and it was a pre-disclosed, pre-arranged sale over the course of those 8 months or so. So it wasn't like he just this morning woke up, sold $500 million, and is going to go, dump the country or the company and flee the country. Just so people didn't get a little scared about like, oh my God, I own coin. Like, did he just really sell? Anyhow, I'll throw it back to you.
Wonderful. Well, let's start it off high level with Bitcoin and where we're at, why we're here, where we're going, and what's next. First things first, if you just look at our trend line from the overall high to the low, we've already broken out of that. Okay, so that is already a trend shift in and of itself on Bitcoin. Even if you move it to logarithmic, you'll see that we retested that trend line. So that's something on Bitcoin I've been watching a lot, was when we were going to break out of this trend line, we did that, and now we're looking for more continuous upside resolution here. I want to let you guys know that the level we're at right now is one of the most important levels of this whole year. If I take your eyes back to our last halving date, which was April 20th, 2024. This is an anchored VWAP from that day. You'll notice it's been used as support once back in 2025, support at the end of 2025, and then we broke through it. Well, it's sitting at around $84,000 right now, and we're coming up to that level just pretty much as of this week. This, for me, this level right here is going to be really where the trend shifts back into maybe full bull. Right now, everything is a little bit, a little bit cautious, but cautious optimism. That being said, if we just look more locally here, you'll see that this leg right here is coming up into the 618, into the $83,000 level. If we add on our moving averages, the daily, you'll see this yellow 200 daily moving average is also coinciding with the golden pocket, we call it, the 0.618 to the 0.65 on the Fibonacci retracement. And if I add this parallel channel from our this rising channel right here, you'll see we hit the top side. So a lot of yellow right here.
You know, so you would say this is kind of a key resistance area that might offer some lower prices, but if we do break above maybe whatever this top range, 85K, if we start to break above and hold that, that could be a really bullish sign that we're going to, you know, potentially have a monster move.
All right. So you imagine you retest the midpoint of this channel. You come up, you break through that level. This gets retested. Now all of that volume that was used as resistance for the last 2 years from the Bitcoin halving becomes support. And that is the impetus for the real, like, that's when I would want to add risk from, like, more risk than I would down here, because there I get a little bit more confirmation that things are shifting to the upside. And then, so we have that. And then we also have the anchored VWAP, volume weighted average price, for you guys out there. Probably have heard of it, but it's just the volume weighted average price. You can choose where you want to anchor it. And we also have that, which was resistance back in early 2026. It's also right here as well. So you can see how important, how technical this level is. It's not random at all. And then also, if you just want a little bit more juice here, the Fibonacci retracement from this last impulse to here was right up into that level, the 618, just like we're coming up into right now. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to be the impetus for all new lows or whatnot. It's just that we want to be cautious that this is a very technical level. And then if we do get a move above this, you could probably see with how funding rates still are negative, we could get a possible big short squeeze up to 100K is what I'm kind of looking at. So Bitcoin, just on the short term, this is where we're at. And then I'm bullish on Bitcoin as long as if I take a volume profile just from the low to where we are now, and I take some of this other stuff off so it gets cleaned up, it's really as simple as this. This is all of our volume since we've moved from the low to this high. As long as we're above around 73.5, which is this prior low around here, then every pullback is really healthy, and I'd be looking for a possible long opportunity to get upside resolution. Another thing to take note of is that the high right here never hit 83,000. We usually like to see those psychological hold numbers get hit. So I imagine that will get cleaned up. So any pullbacks down here are still conducive for upwards price movement on my end.
Love it. Super sharp.
Yeah, so I suppose we should also just look at ETH too real quick. I'm sure people want to see ETH. ETH, exact same thing here. But a little bit lackluster over the last few weeks, but same thing with the trend line break. All right, that was a big thing. We had hesitation right there around April 12th, and then that bullish engulfing candle to get resolution over it. And if I put it on logarithmic, this is the only thing that worries me, is I showed you on logarithmic, the trend line was used as support on Bitcoin, but right now it's actually being used as resistance on Ethereum. So Ethereum a little bit weaker than Bitcoin, which makes me think it's going to get a bit of a deeper pullback. Where to? Well, I posted this in the community as well. So, you know, this is another thing we post charts also throughout the week of maybe possible long entries and whatnot. And this was one of them. I'm just looking for, once again, this whole volume, you can see that there's a big node right here around 2318, right where we're trading as it's coming below this trend line, which could be used as resistance, which makes me think we might get a deeper pullback into about 2100, where we have the anchor VWAP from the low at this orange line lining up with this golden pocket Fibonacci retracement at the 618 from this last low, this structural higher low up to the high down to here. So I'll be looking for possible move in Ethereum for here, which would be good for accumulation for another big move up here, because one thing you'll notice about Ethereum on the daily has not even reached the 200 simple moving average. And from there, that would be about a 26% move. It'll come down a little bit, so let's call it 20 to 25. But a lot of opportunity if this does pull back. Still not bearish overall on it, but it is showing that if ETH is a little bit sluggish, then you know, some of the altcoins, we've talked about this kind of popcorn market where some altcoins are really moving up fast. Some are still a little bit subdued. So you might, you know, you might get a little bit of reprieve in that regard. But nonetheless, we do have some diamonds in the rough. And these are some that we have spoken about throughout Coin of the Week over the last few weeks. One of them that is moving extremely strong today. It is the number one mover on CoinGecko. If you look for the daily, is Ondo. Okay.
Crypt Nation moves markets, man. Look at that. That was our coin of the week.
And hold on, before we do this, because what a call this was, I believe from this week, correct? If I wasn't mistaken.
Tuesday.
From this week's newsletter. Yeah. So Bryce, could you just explain to the audience kind of the thesis of Coin of the Week before Hunter
I'll let Hunter take that away. He's been owning it.
Right. So Coin of the Week, you know, we have a newsletter that is produced by a lot of our smart analysts that we'll talk about a certain theme that's going on in the market that we're very interested in, and that'll usually involve certain protocols, maybe one, maybe multiple. And a lot of times we like to tie the Coin of the Week to some of that theme, but not always. But it's really just coins that we are really interested in that for the long term, but that might be showing actual time to buy, like, you know, it's time to get in now, like over the next few weeks, because we want to be set up for that position. I mean, maybe it'll happen a few weeks after, but it's like we've noticed a signal, we've seen the trend shift, and it's, you know, we want to highlight these coins so that our constituents, you know, our patrons out there have ample time to possibly get into a good lucrative long position.
And it tends to be a combination, just as kind of playing off what Hunter's saying, a good combination of both technicals, like technical analysis, like the charts, but also the fundamentals, and trying to line up both, you know, whether there's a big catalyst coming that's lining up with a good chart breakout, whether there's, you know, a new partnership being announced or a new product release. Like this just got announced that they had at the DTCC. So there was some fundamental reasonings, but also the chart had a very compressed volatility structure. It was at the bottom, kind of back to its double lows. I mean, there was a million things. The 20-week moving average, everything kind of lined up. We're like, hold on, like this thing, you know, fits the bill. It's got an accumulation low. You know, it's breaking above the 20-week. It's got a great, you know, partnership setup and catalyst setup. So that's a little bit of like just how we think about, you know, putting this together.
Right. Well said. Yeah, it's fundamental and technical, and that's really the bread and butter. You know, if you have both of those synced up, then that's when you find those, you know, these gold mines, the ones
that's
that
are when you're dangerous.
That's when they lead the market, you know. Going into a Friday, I mean, I here at the team, we couldn't celebrate any better than up at the highs on Boom. A Friday. So yeah, so Ondo here, you know, this is something I expecting to continue going up higher and higher. I really don't have to make it much more difficult than this. Just take a, you know, volume profile from here to here, and you'll see that we're kind of in this whole low volume area, and we don't reach high volume until back up until the 70s. I don't see why this doesn't reach up until 60 to 70, you know, still, it's still gonna, but that being said, we always like to preach caution, and, you know, we don't want to throw you into the fire right when everything is, you know, people are exiting or anything, but, you know, you do have to be wary that we're at the highs, and it's more prudent to look for pullbacks to get involved if you're interested in. So I'd always would look at our moving averages, our 20 or 50 or 200, and kind of cycle down lower time frames if you're interested in getting in, and just kind of wait for a retest of any of those if you are still looking for a long opportunity. But other than that, yeah, Ondo, amazing winner today. Great fundamentals, breaking out of a 3-month consolidation right here. So really, you know, it's, you know, getting above all these highs right here, hesitated a bit, and then boom, just off to the races. And this is after it spent 500 days from its all-time high over $2, coming all the way down to 20 cents and just right on time with the market and everything. And this is also what bodes well with the overall market. We're seeing stuff like this, stuff that is very important for the infrastructure of blockchain, because this is how we were just talking about BlackRock, JP Morgan, all this. That is the financial side, like the financial engineering side of this. This is the technical, like the actual technological infrastructure, how we're going to build on chain with these real world assets. So
an amazing call right here. Amazing to see this moving. Beyond that, another one that we absolutely called right on time. I'm sure some of you guys might be familiar out there with some of the DeFi, decentralized finance stuff that happened a few weekends ago regarding a malicious actor in Aave and draining, you know, about $290 million worth of assets by using bad collateral. What that impacted was some borrowing and lending platforms. All right. So there are platforms out there that you can go supply your Bitcoin and then you can borrow against it and then use that capital elsewhere. You know, just like you could with your stock. You can have your stock, you know, allow it to be shorted by other people and you get a fee, you get an interest rate off of it. So same thing, same concept, just trying to unlock liquidity. Well, Spark SPK is in that arena of borrowing and lending. You know, Bryce, I know that you guys spoke with one of the guys over there in the protocol, and this was one that we called right around here before it broke out, right when it did kind of break out of the highs and then retested this 26 cents, and then right after that we got an amazing 135% move all the way up to the high. And actually, this was the second target we had shown in the coin of the week writing, that this was the actual exact target. So you would have hit target one, target two, aptly so, because it pulled back quite a bit. And this one is still geared for higher as we've moved into the daily 20 SMA. We'll see if we get some more upside potential. But this is another example of how the fundamentals and the technicals really align to bring a diamond in the rough. And so we're a big fan of this one and hopefully get some more upside here. And then just one more that is also moving. And this is one that we actually wrote about a month ago. So this is what I was talking about. We like these coins for the long term. And sometimes the setups take a little bit to play out. But lo and behold, now it's time to shine. And I mean, just from we were talking
beautiful
about
chart.
It. What's that?
Beautiful chart.
Beautiful chart. I mean, you see these moving averages all coalescing, and then it's retested the daily 200 yellow here multiple times, and it squeezes up, you know, and then just with momentum and magnitude, it's already up 50% from that, up about 19% today. So up there with Ondo. So two calls that we wrote about very, you know, within the last month, Ondo being this week, this one about last month. This is another one that has fundamentals and technicals involved with it. AKT, otherwise known as Akash, is a AI compute DPIN project, so decentralized physical infrastructure network project, where they kind of buy and sell compute for people that, you know, want to offload some of their bandwidth from their GPUs. You know, they kind of build a marketplace for people to do that. And it's really big during this AI economy because people are using, you know, chips and GPU and bandwidth like crazy. I mean, that's the bottleneck in the future.
Yeah, it's
that's
like what I talked about at the outset,
exactly.
Right? These engineers online, developers, right? They're demanding these tokens, right? And these tokens are sort of what people are using to pay the AI to process all these different things. And so Akash and Render is another one that's kind of right at the epicenter of all this.
Yeah. Render, another great one we've talked about. And you can see it's starting to kind of get, it's also the exact same pattern here where it was squeezing right here. And now Render is about to get its moment in the sun. I'd imagine this starts moving up back to these highs. So that's part of the AI narrative that's going on right now. But just three calls that we've talked about on Coin of the Week and many others, of course, but just three wanted to highlight because it was aptly so to do that today with just how the market's been. But yeah, TiVo.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for breaking that down. And again, that's Coin of the Week. It's all part of being inside the community. So if that kind of next level of information, something that you're interested in, there's a link below. It's the VIP program here at Crypt Nation. You get, you know, the newsletter that has Coin of the Week in it. You get VIP coaching calls with Hunter, with Bryce, with the entire team. It's just, you know, so much more to be involved instead of getting, you know, the rundown or where we can't really break down in depth the calls. We kind of do more of the macro news. So if getting into the calls and the price action and the TA is more what you're looking for, check out the link. It's super, super fun. And you get more of us, which, you know, what's not to love about that? I wanted to give a shout out to the chat. I mean, it's buzzing today, boys. We're all over the place. It is. Hundreds of people. We got people from Arizona, Oklahoma, Tennessee, dare I say on a vineyard in Canada. Somebody's working and listening on their phone. I saw somebody from Nigeria. We're worldwide today. Really appreciate everybody joining in. Again, check the links to support the show. And if that's not something you can do, at least give us a thumbs up. We want to see 100 thumbs up for this episode. We're buzzing today. And if you're new, bottom right, hit the logo and subscribe. Something that we want to move along to, Hunter, you could stop sharing your screen. There was a clip that was circulating around. I saw it on TV. It was Van Eck's Matthew Siegel. He kind of had a breakdown of Bitcoin, where he thought the current state of Bitcoin is, and then a quite lofty target of $1 million per Bitcoin. So it's something that we're going to want to watch here. I trimmed down this clip. It's going to be about a minute 20. So he kind of gives a little macro take. He ties it exactly to what Bryce said of how Bitcoin's kind of trading in the tech market, but then elaborates on his $1 million price prediction, and then we'll react to it on the other side. So let's take a listen.
Along the way, right now, Bitcoin's correlation with the NASDAQ has actually reached a five-year high. So a lot of this is a macro move. And what keeps us encouraged, even at current levels, is that we're not seeing the froth in the derivatives markets. If you look at the options markets, the futures markets, to us, it still looks like this is a short covering rally, which means positioning is negative. And so we're feeling pretty constructive. The big move is really in the miners today. Those are the stocks that are up, you know, 5% plus. Hut 8 is up 30%. That's a Bitcoin miner who's pivoting to AI. There's a really virtuous cycle going on right now between the convergence of AI and Bitcoin. So that's where we're really trying to play with our node ETF, which has had a good run.
You said $1 million in Bitcoin, which is at 80K now?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take some number of years.
How many years for that?
Maybe half a decade, I think, is possible.
Five years?
Yeah. When you look at the demographic trends and the intentions of young investors to allocate to Bitcoin, it's going to be like the video game industry, where 30 years ago it was just kids playing video games. Now Elon Musk plays video games. People don't quit. They also don't quit Bitcoin. We now have the first central bank buying Bitcoin for its reserves. So this is a mega trend, but it's going to be very volatile along the way. And we're trying to smooth out some of that volatility.
Okay, that's a big jump, but we'll see. 5 years time, Matt, appreciate it.
Kind of sounds like exactly what Bryce said 20 minutes ago for all the trends. So Bryce, handing it off to you to get started, and we'll just kind of kick around that.
Yes. If you have... So he's calling for $1 million within 5 years. And I was running the math a little bit before we hopped on. And $1 million over the course of 5 years from a starting point of $80,000 where we're at today would be a 65% compound annual growth rate. Okay. So that's pretty substantial. 65% compound annual growth rate. Hunter, maybe you could look up what Bitcoin's current CAGR is. I'm not sure if it's 65 or if it's around there. I do know Michael Saylor has talked about a 35% compound annual growth rate for Bitcoin's, I mean, kind of terminal value or its kind of long-term target is a 35%. So I said, okay, well, what would 35% compound annual growth rate starting from $80,000 look like by 2031, when this $1 million price target, that would put us at a $364,000 price target for Bitcoin. Well, if you use Michael Saylor's long-term number of 35%, if you use Van Eck, who, by the way, Van Eck, their group didn't just fall off the turnip truck. They've been in markets for, you know, 30 years or longer. They've got $200 billion of assets under management in some of the best ETFs. And so they're not just, again, willy-nilly saying all this stuff. For him to say, you know, we think $1 million per Bitcoin by 2031 is possible. I mean, it carries a lot of weight. So
I just want to pause real quick. I'm in a little shock before we continue the conversation. Absolute shout out to Anna, a $100 super chat.
Wow.
That's a crypto 101 first. Somebody's really enjoying the show.
Holy
Thank
smokes.
You so much.
I think that's our biggest super chat ever.
That's a 5X, or I think it's like a 5X. I think we got like 10-20
bucks. I think that's a 65% CAGR right there.
That's unbelievable. Thank you so much.
And Barrera is our new favorite customer of the day.
Hero. Absolute hero. Thank you so much, Anna. Sorry to cut you off. Hunter, were you jumping in there?
I was just saying that's a 65% CAGR, but I looked it up, and actually over the last 10 years, so just let's not use kind of the outlier of the beginning of inception, it is around 67%. So
wow, okay.
Yeah. They're so I mean, right, I guess it's in line, but you know, it's hard to believe, because as it matures in the mature markets, you would think that the growth rate kind of subsides a bit. But you know, I always like to say on a rolling 5-year basis, I'm extremely bullish. So wherever that lands me in 5 years, it'll be a good spot. But a million, you know, I sometimes take that, you know, let's be careful with the price targets, but maybe the optimism is what's really most important, right?
Question. He was talking about Hut popped on the mining kind of changing to AI. I know Riot and somebody just announced something with NVIDIA. It was maybe Hut. Was it Hut or Riot? Somebody did. I have a question overall. So as a couple of these Bitcoin miners transition their power supply to going down the AI powertrain, does that leave kind of a void where maybe there's not as much Bitcoin being mined down the line as well? And kind of that 5-year window, these miners might just follow the money and completely stop mining Bitcoin, or, you know, it's going to leave an opportunity for a fewer miners to mine, and that leaves the price going up to make it worth it for the power. Is it too early in that storyline, or is that something that, you know, we can start thinking about maybe?
Great question, Hunter. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one. I don't have a super solid answer other than, you know, Bitcoin mining has gone through many different like phases and stuff over time, and it's sort of 2-week difficulty adjustment algorithm that it targets really corrects for a lot of these aberrations in mining power, how much mining power is sort of, you know, pointed to Bitcoin, how much mining power is, you know, not pointed at it, is changing over from, you know, BTC mining to, I don't know, AI stuff like that. So I think there definitely will be, you know, pressure as, you know, on Bitcoin miners, like where they're, you know, putting their power and energy as the prices of AI mining goes up, if you will, or providing compute to AI inference and AI training and all that stuff, what needs a lot of compute. But I think the price of Bitcoin will always, you know, be the incentivizer to say, okay, it's getting a little bit too expensive. It's getting a little bit too cheap. And the miners will point back to mining Bitcoin once it gets too cheap. So it'll be something definitely that, you know, I should do a little bit more research on, because it does seem like there's a lot of, like, I know Galaxy just announced that they're, or not just, but like last year announced that they're moving some of their public Bitcoin mining infrastructure and data centers to becoming, you know, AI specific ones. I think you said Hut 8 or some of the other Riot Marathon. So I think to one extent,
NVIDIA announced a partnership with Iron.
So to one extent, that increases the optionality of the company's value, right? Because they now don't just have to be beholden to Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin prices, and they could actually be more flexible as these, you know, providers and stuff of, you know, Bitcoin mining, AI inference, RL training, whatever they're going to do. So I think it, in a sense, strengthens the case for Bitcoin miners. And there's a great ETF out there as well called WGMI, the CoinShares Bitcoin Mining ETF. Let me just double check. WGMI, the CoinShares Bitcoin Mining ETF.
Yeah.
We're going to make it. Exactly. It is a play on the words of the meme, Wagmi. We're all going to make it. Which was like big in, I don't know, 22 or something like that, when everybody clearly did not make it through the FTX implosion. But I would check out that, because that thing is also showing, you know, really good price structure as if people are accumulating Bitcoin miners. So there's a whole nother science that kind of goes into evaluating these equities. Something that we should definitely cover a little bit more, but that would be my shout out there, WGMI. If you just want to get general price exposure to Bitcoin miners and their conversion back and forth to AI mining and Bitcoin mining.
The actual funny, like, comedic side to this story, if it completely loops, is people stop, the miners stop mining Bitcoin to chase the AI power and the profitability there, and then the AI chooses Bitcoin, and then the miners gotta come back and the price skyrockets. That's a good storyline. That's a 5-year storyline. That's $1 million Bitcoin. Hey, maybe we're solving it right here.
I say that the most ironic story is like the one that becomes real, kind of like an Occam's razor type thing, but it's irony.
Most ironic outcome is the most likely.
So great conversation. We're already hitting against the hour here, so I want to move us along. One more topic to kick around, then we'll get some Hunter hellos, and then we'll get out of here. Clarity Act, fellas. Bryce, we haven't really gotten, I know on the podcast it's come up a little bit, but we've been covering the Poly market odds here on the show really all year. And enough,
it was 65% last night when I checked.
Yeah. Right. And so we actually had a couple shows. So Brendan and I were live on air, and it was this day. It like dropped from 45 to like 37. We were live on air. We were like, what's going on? And I think it was just, you know, some little headline. And we kept saying, like, oh, well, I'd take a flyer on that. And then it popped back up. And then we came back down. I think down here, it was the week Brian and I were doing a show, and we said the same thing. Like, all right, anytime it goes under 50, we would probably take a flyer, because it felt 50-50. And now recently that's completely shifted. As you can see, we're back up to 71. Tons of momentum coming out of DC, coming from the crypto companies. The banks seemingly got a little bit of what they wanted with the stablecoin yield. The crypto industry seeming like, okay, well, at least there's some guardrails. Kind of feels like a classic negotiation. Everybody's walking away wishing they got a little more, maybe. But wanted to get your take on.
Hey, I mean, I think you said it exactly. I mean, this is a negotiation between the banking lobby, who has entrenched interests and incumbent sort of fiduciaries that don't want to get disrupted and that have funded them and so on and so forth. And a lot of those people are in the pockets of the big banking Senate lobby, you know, the likes of Sherrod Brown or Elizabeth Warren, you know, some of these other folks who have been really at the beck and call of the big banks for years and years and years. So I think that this is a whole different world of people donating that are crypto guys. They're fighting for a completely different future that the banks are fighting for. And so I think, again, you're not going to have both sides completely happy from this negotiation. But if there's one thing I do know, it's that Trump had essentially, you know, campaigned on and made a lot of campaign promises that he was going to get, you know, more crypto regulation dialed in. The SEC and the CFTC have made public statements backing that. They wanted to get crypto more locked in to the American economy. The very first podcast that the SEC hosted with this, you know, was all about crypto. With, I think it was Hester Peirce and Mark Ueda and Paul Atkins and all these guys who are running the SEC. So very clearly, the regulators want something done. And again, if Trump wants something done and he's got all of these regulators, you've got the Treasury Secretary, the Secretary of Commerce, everybody's kind of working hand in glove to get something done. And then he makes the public call this week saying July 4th, get it done by then, or else we're going to have big issues. And so I think it, you know, now obviously it's getting priced in. It's up from 45% odds to 70% odds over just the course of about a week. So that's, you know, that's a good sign that this is going to happen. Is crypto going to get everything they want? No. Is banks going to get everything they want? No. But is Trump going to get exactly what he wants? Yes, because I don't think he really cares one way or another how the bill breaks. He just wants to have another trophy, in a sense, to show, hey, during the midterms, all the people who voted for me because of the crypto stuff, bam, look what we've got you in 2 years. We've got the Clarity Act done. We've got the Genius Act done. And we're going to move on, right? Like I earned your vote for that promise. Bam, here's making good on it, and we're moving on. I don't think he really cares about some of the nuance that goes into it. I think he, of course, wants to preserve, you know, the fundamental freedoms and, you know, excitement that we all share with crypto, but for some of the nuance and how it gets done, because you got to remember, I mean, Trump was debanked. Like, his whole organization was debanked after he, you know, lost his presidency and so on and so forth. In between his first and second term, they lost, you know, Trump organization lost all the banking access. They had, you know, thousands of employees and millions of dollars and all these different jurisdictions. And so this really radicalized the whole Trump family and said, well, we never want that to happen to any person. We want to have alternatives to banking. And that's why they got so involved with DeFi and, you know, Bitcoin and all that kind of stuff. That's my long-winded answer.
I love it. Hunter, anything to add from your perspective? It's obviously something that's kind of continuous.
Yeah,
we'll cover it.
That bump from that below 45% happened after some comments at Bitcoin Las Vegas when I guess it was Senator Also Brooks, I think that's what her name. She had mentioned that we're going to mark this up in May. And so we're starting. And then I guess on top of Trump's comments, I thought you could look there to see if it's also going to be by May 30th or by June 30th. I don't know if they took that away, but for a while you could see like if it would have been this summer, what the odds are there. Because I'd be curious to see what those have changed to be like. But nonetheless, I think this is going to be one of the biggest inflection points of really the macro theme going forward. I think it's going to come more at like a higher low though than at like when we're already going up. I think it'll be like a macro bottom when it comes in, to be honest, because I think it's just that much, it's that important with the, I mean, at least that important regarding relevant to everything else that's going on. It's probably,
you don't think the market's pricing this success in right now? Maybe correlate some of the move that we've had in April and in May, essentially correlate that with these higher expectations or odds of this approval, that this might actually be now the market starting to price in the success of the Clarity Act actually happening. One way to think
about
it.
Yeah, it probably could. I mean, especially with how fast information moves now in these markets, how you talked about earlier with, you know, bear markets being a lot less in drawdown and even in time. And then now having stuff like Polymarket giving you insight into like how you discount those valuations in the future. That could be the case. But I think we would be getting a bigger move if that was getting priced in. That's just my thought. But nonetheless, I think it's going to be a huge impetus for when we decide to go to all-time highs again.
Well, I decide more now. I want all-time highs now.
I declare now.
I love it. I can't wait. It's really fun to keep covering on the show. And like, obviously, Hunter will be back more often. So it's something that we can track. And one of my favorite things about the rundown is kind of getting everybody's different opinion. Obviously, you know, we're all long-term bulls. We wouldn't be here if we weren't. But it's fun to get kind of differentiating opinions on, hey, the technical analysis on Bitcoin or the charts for, you know, altcoins and kind of $1 million Bitcoin. This is what the rundown's all about. So really appreciate you guys joining. To end the show for some fun, we wanted to get to know Hunter. So Hunter, give a quick just intro, your background, how you got here, and then we'll have a couple quick hitters for you and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, well, it was a long, arduous journey. I was getting tomatoes thrown at me coming down the the ship, and then I finally made my way to the promised land. But no,
to the new land.
My crypto journey started around 2017, 2018, much like a lot of people trading on Binance. At this point, I was in university still, and I was just big into, you know, economics and finance, and I was really just trading, losing money, not really focused on the actual fundamentals of blockchain and whatnot. And then around 2020, when, you know, of course the market went into chaos, I was working in wealth management, just doing stocks and bonds, your typical finance bro stuff. And during that time, that's when DeFi, decentralized finance, kind of had its big summer, its big boom. And that's when I got involved and really involved in the DeFi field, and then just meeting a lot of people through the communities and Discords, working, you know, I'm a part of some DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, where I do some market contributions from technical analysis standpoint. I've also worked in the educational sector in crypto, teaching people about DeFi and liquidity pools, and I also hold a CFA charter, so a lot of my background is portfolio management, investment management, research analysis. But lo and behold, I mean, I've been in crypto for a long time. I'm someone that believes in the future of finance and the shakeup that's going to happen, and I want to be on the forefront of that. And no better place than being here with the Crypto 101 team, the Crypt Nation team, and because it's a fast-moving game. And every single day, things are changing. Every single day, someone says, hey, did you hear that? I'm like, well, I haven't heard it yet because I'm trying to digest 10 other pieces of news.
It's true.
Right? But yeah, I'm just a big believer in finance and tech and the integration of it. And, you know, once I became a part of this team, it's been awesome. And I'm looking forward to many more rundowns and, you know, seeing other people in the community as often as possible.
Awesome. Heck yeah. Yeah, you've been a great addition, man. Loved having you here.
Yeah, it's been fun to get to know you and also get your takes, because it's always fun. Just like I said, I like the variety of our team and how, you know, overall how smart every single person is, but just the different backgrounds and different perspectives that everybody has. But for some fun info, we wanted to go over a couple of fun little questions. So we want to go, what's your favorite type of music?
Well, behind my computer, you can't see, but I have a whole DJ set up. So I love DJing like EDM, house music stuff. And if I'm getting a little wonky, I'll go for the dubstep. But I love a lot of house music, some drum and bass as well, but really just all the electronic music.
I was going through just looking online, and I came across this. It was pretty big show you did.
Yeah. That was the headliner at EDC Las Vegas. Yeah, that was one of my best sets to date.
Yeah, that was good. I think it's on SoundCloud if people want to check it out. Usually you are facing the crowd, though.
Well, there was another stage. It was a silent disco.
It was a silent disco.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. You can catch me at the silent disco, baby.
Oh, that's funny. So favorite movie?
Well, you know, I had to be careful with this because they could be your security question answers. So, my favorite movie is The Count of Monte Cristo. It's actually based off a book, a very famous book, but it's a story of love and betrayal. And I love movies that are that are very cerebral, though, more so than like action oriented. I like the psychological twists.
Wow!
So I love The Count of Monte Cristo. I recommend everybody watches that movie. It's
You'll make a great husband one day. You know, oh babe, I don't want to watch action movies. I just want to watch something with something that pulls on my heartstrings and really makes.
Well, no,
me
because
think.
Then they'll be asking me, "What's this about?"
That is so good.
Two fun ones there. Well, to wrap up, Bryce, any final thoughts before we close out? We got to know Hunter. We went over everything from top of the Bitcoin charts. We're going to a million. Coin of the week, the popcorn market. Leave everybody with your final thought.
Look, we had a great episode. Clearly, we're bullish. Clearly, there's a lot of good things going on. I think it's important to remember, you know, if you think about your portfolio, make sure you still have some Bitcoin. I know in these altcoin cycles, when you see the small caps moving up 100%, 200% over the week, sometimes you take that precious Bitcoin that you've been saving and holding on to, and you go spend it at the top of the altcoin market, or you spend it on altcoins that are about to retrace. And so I think one of the names of the game is to use altcoins to trade back and forth to stack more Bitcoin over the long term, right? You want to have some Bitcoin in your long-term holdings that you're just never going to touch, okay? So that's one thing I would sort of think with, is there's all this excitement and volatility. Think of Bitcoin as like, you know, what you want to get more of over time, altcoins. You know, there are some altcoins that you want to buy and hold for the long term as well, as we talk about. But a lot of those, you know, as there's these big moves, you know, they have these big volatile events. Skim some profits, store it into Bitcoin. That's one thing I would say. Another thing is, you know, clearly we do have, you know, good breadth in the market. A lot of altcoins are starting to have their retrace, or their retracement from their highs, their December or October highs. We're starting to have that big leg retrace higher, which is a good sign. But again, like we showed you, things are starting to bump into their 200-day average, their anchored volume weighted average price. There's a couple reasons which make us think we might see some near-term lower prices that are going to be, in our opinion, very buyable. So patience is the name of the game. You want to see, you know, once you have, you know, a couple days of red, that might be the buy signal there for the near term as we retest these breakout zones. And then just keep a long-term view. If this is overwhelming, if, you know, you think, man, I'm not the kind of person who, you know, wants to trade every day or whatever, you just want, you know, higher level information, or you just, you know, I would say, you know, take a long-term view. And if you get overwhelmed with the short-term fluctuations and all the opportunity, just, you know, take a long-term view and don't feel pressured into doing any one thing or the other. And the last thing I'll say is subscribe to our service below. Take a look at what we do. I mean, we're researching crypto, fundamental analysis, technical analysis, video content, written content. You've got a community of thousands and thousands of different traders sharing their ideas. We've got so much for you. A university video course that shows you how to get started with crypto, how to store crypto, how to, you know, trade on exchanges. We add videos to this, you know, all the time. And so we just have a really big community of people who want to help you and who have for the last, you know, almost, you know, 8 or 9 years been doing this very, very actively. And so we think we've got a lot of what you really do need to succeed in crypto. And so, yeah, there's some links down below. You guys know where to find us. Hunter, you're the man. We can't thank you enough for being on the team, for taking a chance with us. We got a lot of great stuff to build in the future. So you're going to see a lot more of us.
Yeah, and now's the time to do it, right? I mean, everybody knows when the euphoria hits and Bitcoin's at 120, 150, maybe 200. It's like, and then altcoins start popping off. And then it's like, oh, wow, I should go join this community. It's like, hey, we kind of preach at the top of the show. Who's building? Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Jefferies, Crypto 101. It keeps pumping out great content, great interviews with Bryce and Brendan. And so if you enjoy the interviews, if you enjoyed this show today, go check out the links below because you're going to absolutely love being inside the community. Really appreciate everybody joining. Thank you, Bryce. Thank you, Hunter. Thank you to the chat. Thank you, Anna. Unbelievable. $100 super chat. One final call. Like, subscribe, hit the logo and subscribe if you're new. Really thank you guys. That's going to be all for today. Have a great weekend and we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.